Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a CD of an Easter and Ascension sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Ascension Day, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Easter and Ascension sermons.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You can get the impression that the only doubts being entertained about the prevailing view of biology, of human origins, really in some sense of the origins of all things, the only doubts being entertained that are being entertained by people who have religious objections to Darwinism, to the view of evolution. Is that true? You might get the impression, and I do, I read the books of prominent scientists in various different fields, popularly written, and they definitely want to give the impression that the only people doubting their theories when it comes to origins are religious types. No serious scientist would ever doubt these things, but is that true? Joining us to talk about non-religious skepticism of Darwinian evolution on this Thursday afternoon, May the 9th, Casey Luskin. He's an attorney with graduate degrees in science and law. He's a research coordinator for the Discovery Institute, co-founder of the Intelligent Design and Evolution Awareness Center, and he's author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled, Are There Non-Religious Skeptics of Darwinian Evolution and Proponents of Intelligent Design? Casey, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
You say that theists in general can rest assured that religion isn't the only force that's driving doubts about Darwinism. What are the other forces?
Well, the other force is the scientific evidence. A number of these atheists and non-religious scholars and scientists, they've looked at the same evidence that, say, some religious scientists have looked at, and they've come to the same conclusions, that the evidence simply does not support the view that life is the result of an unguided process of, you know, natural selection and random mutation. So the driving force, simply put, is the evidence. This is what is driving these people to question these materialist accounts of origins.
How, just in from your perspective, how hard is it for people like this to buck the trend? It certainly is kind of the received orthodoxy in many of the scientific disciplines. Is it risky for them to question these things?
I think it is. I think it's not necessarily as hard for them to challenge prevailing theories like Darwinian evolution as, say, it would be for a religious person, but it is still difficult. As a matter of fact, one of the things that surprised me as I was writing this article for Christian Research Journal and doing the research on the article was I found a number of these scientists explained that when they started to challenge Darwinian theory, when they started to sort of come out of the closet that they were skeptics of Darwinian evolution, they faced pushback from their colleagues. Jerry Fedor, who's a cognitive scientist at Rutgers, he said that people warned him not to talk about his doubts about Darwin in public because it would bring science into disrepute. So these people have actually, you know, faced warnings. Don't talk about your views. Don't challenge these prevailing Darwinian evolutionary theories, or your career could be harmed. And I actually really applaud these scientists because they have a lot of courage to stick their necks out and stand up for what they believe.
How has it become axiomatic in the sciences to accept, whether you're a biologist or not, to accept the biological explanations offered by Darwinism?
Well, how did it get to the point where it's axiomatic? Well, that's a really long story that really goes back, you know, over 100 years to the time when Darwin's theory was first accepted. I think that what it comes down to is in science, scientists are often intolerant of views that challenge the reigning paradigm. This phenomenon has been observed not just in the field of evolution, but in other scientific fields, that when scientists come up with ideas that challenge the reigning paradigm, whether you're talking about, you know, plate tectonics or evolution or Big Bang, lots of these sort of mainstream theories, scientists often just don't look at evidence that challenges these prevailing consensus views. Now, I think that in some cases, the consensus is right. I personally think that plate tectonics, for example, is one of the supported scientific theories out there. But just because something is the consensus doesn't mean that it's therefore the right. We have to look at the evidence and look at whether these theories hold up to everything they're claimed to explain. And unfortunately, when it comes to Darwinian theory, there's a lot of cracks in the foundation, but unfortunately, you get a lot of people trying to sort of squelch the views of scientists that dissent from that viewpoint.
One more question in that vein. We should know that science, strictly speaking, is not done by consensus. It is not a matter of opinion polls. It's a matter of data. It's a matter of experimentation. It's a matter of being able to falsify or potentially falsify certain ideas, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, Michael Crichton, the famous science fiction writer, he said, whenever you hear somebody invoking the consensus, you should become skeptical, because if the evidence was on their side, they wouldn't need to invoke the consensus to defend that view. So at the end of the day, what matters is not how many votes a particular scientific theory does or does not get. What matters is what the evidence says. And this is why, you know, on topics like the evolutionary origin of life or the Darwinian origin of human beings, there is dissent. There's a lot of hard questions that are being asked. You need to be willing to ask those questions and not say, oh, just because this person disagrees with the consensus view, therefore their views ought to be dismissed. That's a really dangerous thing for scientists to do.
You mentioned earlier Jerry Fedor. Who else are we talking about that has found reason to question or doubt Darwinism?
One of the most eminent questioners or critics of Darwinian theory in recent years was Lynn Margulis, who was actually a member of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences as a biologist until she died in 2011. And she was a vocal critic of Darwinian theory. She wrote in one of her books that mutations tend to induce sickness, death, or deficiencies, and they do not cause speciation. That's almost a direct paraphrase of what she wrote. So she doesn't believe that mutations can produce new species. Instead, they tend to produce sickness, death, or deficiencies. Well, where else do you see people making arguments like that? You see a lot of arguments like that coming out of the intelligent design camp. Now, Margulis herself, I don't think she would ever go on to endorse intelligent design. She was a materialist. She ultimately believed in materialist explanations of evolution, but she was a very vocal critic of the standard neo-Darwinian theory. She also, like Jerry Fedor, said that once you start to challenge one of these foundational biological paradigms like neo-Darwinian evolution, that you become persona non grata in your field. And so I think she also experienced pushback from her colleagues for being a skeptic of Darwinism, and I applaud her for standing up for what she believed. Thomas Nagel is another good example. He's a philosopher and a legal scholar at New York University, and he's also a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. He came out with a book last year published by Oxford University Press titled Mind and Cosmos, Why the Materialist Neo-Darwinian Conception of Nature is Almost Certainly False. And he argues quite strenuously in his book that neo-Darwinian evolution is not capable of explaining the origin of species. And he's taken a lot of flack for that as well. And actually, in his book, he praises intelligent design theorists, saying that they do not deserve the scorn with which they are commonly met. It is manifestly unfair. So I think it's very interesting to see how some of these scientists actually realize that the ID viewpoint has merit.
And these, to this point, these are not scientists who would say, obviously they're not coming from a religious viewpoint. That's kind of the basis of our conversation here. But these are not scientists who would necessarily say, oh, and I'm in favor of intelligent design. They simply say, as a theory itself to explain the data, Darwinism and its alleged mechanisms for evolution just don't do the trick.
That's exactly right, especially in the case of Lynn Margulis and Jerry Fedor. They are out-and-out opponents of intelligent design. Thomas Nagel, well, it's hard to say. He actually does believe that it should be constitutionally permissible to teach ID in public schools. I don't think he gives an out-and-out endorsement for ID in his book, but he certainly says that, actually he says, the defenders of intelligent design deserve our gratitude. That's what he wrote in his Oxford University Press book last year. So I think there's some sympathy there, although his main point is that he's a critic of Darwinism. I mean, he'll put his foot down on that argument, but I don't know about intelligent design.
Tell us about Steve Fuller.
Steve Fuller is someone who actually, I think, would go out and go so far as to defend ID. He's a sociologist at the University of Warwick, and what's interesting about him is that he actually testified in favor of teaching intelligent design at the 2005 Kitzmiller versus Dover trial. And so he approaches the whole debate from a little bit different than your sort of a standard scientific view, because he's a sociologist. And he looks at this sort of from the point of view of, you know, what are the social dynamics involved in the debate? He sees that there's a lot of bigotry actually involved in opposing intelligent design and defending a naturalistic viewpoint, and he thinks that it's actually sort of used as a power play by scientists who will try to squelch the views of pro-intelligent design scientists. He also, interestingly, even though he's an agnostic, he sees that intelligent design, or sort of a theistic worldview, were responsible for the growth and the arise of modern science. And he recognizes that sort of monotheistic Christianity was necessary for creating the current scientific enterprise that we have today. So it's interesting that he sees that if it weren't for sort of the Judeo-Christian worldview that's dominant in Western civilization, we would not even have science today.
One of the things he also points out, with about a minute for your response, is something we've heard from other guests here on the same subject, and that is, with regard to the biological sciences, you could retire Darwinism and everyone could still do their research and still do perfectly good science in biology without Darwinism. What are your thoughts there?
Oh, that's absolutely right. Professor Fuller recognizes that you could do science without Darwinian theory. And actually, another scientist who, to my knowledge, was not really a very religious man was Philip Scow. I didn't talk about him in my article, but he was a member of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, and he wrote some articles saying that you could do good science without Darwinism. The Darwinism is just added on as sort of, he calls it, a narrative gloss. It's not necessary to do good science. So there's, I think when you get down and dirty with scientists, they'll admit that, you know, a lot of these Darwinian ideas, you don't need them just to figure out how biology works.
Casey Luskin is our guest. We'll have him for a few minutes on the other side of the break on this Thursday afternoon, May the 9th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about non-religious skeptics of Darwinian evolution. He's an attorney with graduate degrees in science and law, research coordinator for the Discovery Institute, and co-founder of the Intelligent Design and Evolution Awareness Center. We'll be right back. Have you wondered what classical Lutheran education is all about? Are you a Lutheran homeschooler? Would you like to learn more about teaching students the essentials of biblical interpretation, law and gospel, or worldviews from a Lutheran perspective? Come join the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education July 16th through the 18th at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. For more information, visit ccle.org. That's ccle.org.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Resurrection Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Bethlehem Lutheran, Parma, Ohio. St. Paul's Lutheran, Lockport, Illinois. Faith Lutheran, Columbus, Indiana. Glory of Christ Lutheran, Plymouth, Minnesota. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Arnold, Missouri. Peace Lutheran, Sussex, Wisconsin. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Cedar Falls, Iowa. Zion Lutheran, Moberly, Missouri, and Elm Grove Lutheran, Elm Grove, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An important new book.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
An important new book entitled The Healing Cell, chronicles successful adult stem cell therapies and examines the promise of ongoing adult stem cell research. The authors of the book, Drs. Robin Smith and Max Gomez, received their medical degrees respectively from Yale and Wake Forest University. They assert in the book that, quote, "The success of adult stem cells has been so great that there is no reason to continue embryonic stem cell research, which necessarily involves the destruction of a human person."
Are you pro-life? Then visit our website at sba-list.org and discover how you can make a difference. I'm Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Thanks for taking a stand.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Casey Luskin of the Discovery Institute about non-religious skeptics of Darwinian evolution. There's one other that I'd like you to mention, if you could. I think it's David Berlinski, you mentioned in your article. Who is this, and what is the basis of his skepticism with regard to Darwinism?
Yeah, David Berlinski is an interesting example. He's a fellow at Discovery Institute, where I work, but he lives in Paris. He was trained in philosophy at Princeton, and he's been a postdoctoral fellow in molecular biology and math at Columbia University and a number of other places. And he has been a longtime critic of Darwinian evolution. He describes himself basically as a secular Jew. He says he has faithfully maintained since the age of 13 a remarkable indifference to the religious life. So he's kind of got a pretty wry wit and a good sense of humor. But in his 2009 book called The Deniable Darwin and Other Essays, it's sort of a collection of a bunch of writings he's put together over the years that challenge Darwinian evolution and the origin of life. He really makes some of the standard criticisms of Darwinian evolution. He observes that the fossil record does not yield the transitional forms that we ought to find if Darwinian theory were true. And then he goes on to say that when we look at biology, we see immense complexity. He says that there's the human mind, an instrument like no other in the biological world, conscious, flexible, penetrating, inscrutable, and profound. And in his view, he says we would never attribute the existence of a complex artifact to chance. And for obvious reasons, because he goes on to say that when we encounter these artifacts, these machine-like structures, they always go back to an intelligent agent or a mind. And so he makes a very strong argument for intelligent design, that the complexity of biology, the complexity of life, requires an intelligent agent, requires explanation by design. And so it's really striking to see him, you know, he sort of does come from, I think, a religious background, but he himself, you know, calls himself a secular Jew, to see someone like that making such a strong argument for intelligent design.
Are these skeptics from within the academy, outside the religious circle, are they perhaps the very first of those of a trend? That is, could we possibly be seeing some light at the end of the Darwinian tunnel?
Well, I think it is safe to say that there have been over the years a very good number of secular scientists who have challenged Darwinian evolution. These are certainly not the first. However, it is the case that we are seeing them coming out in increasing numbers in recent years. Scientists are becoming more and more fed up with neo-Darwinian evolution as an explanation for how life diversified. And you can see this in the peer-reviewed literature, actually. The number of articles that have come out challenging the sufficiency of random mutation and natural selection to produce the complexity of life, the number of technical papers we've seen making those arguments in the last few years has almost, you could say, it's exploded. And so Stephen Meyer, who works at Discovery Institute, has a new book coming out called Darwin's Doubt. And in the prologue, he says that never has there been such a great disparity between the popular perception of a scientific theory and its status in the peer-reviewed literature, because the peer-reviewed technical literature are challenging Darwinian evolution left and right. And so I think it is safe to say that we are seeing a new trend now. Some scientists are even saying now we're in a post-Darwinian world where we know that Darwinian evolution is the answer, and we're sort of in this Wild West zone of evolutionary thinking where there's a lot of theories that are out there competing to replace Darwinian evolution because it's clear that that theory doesn't work anymore.
Casey Luskin is an attorney with graduate degrees in science and law. He's a research coordinator for the Discovery Institute, co-founder of the Intelligent Design and Evolution Awareness Center. He's author of an article in the latest Christian research journal titled, Are There Non-Religious Skeptics of Darwinian Evolution and Proponents of Intelligent Design? And you'll find a link to the Discovery Institute and to the Intelligent Design and Evolution Awareness Center at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Casey, thanks for being our guest.
It's a lot of fun, Todd. Thanks a lot for having me.